Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
We're only days away from the mayoral race. There are plenty of weasel moves going on right now, backstabbing and front stabbing and sidestabbing. Then you've got the coalition of environmentalists trying to take my toilet paper away. Jesse Smollett. Oh boy, Jesse, you're in trouble. Make it up stories again, Jesse. But the saddest thing is, have you heard about former U.S. Representative Jesse Jackson Jr., the Democrat of Stuffed Elkheads, and his mom, Jacqueline Jackson? They've got a new book out. It's called Letters to My Son in Prison. And I just saw them in a clip with Gayle King on CBS this morning. It was so sad.
Well, what struck me about the letters was the simplicity of them. Just day-to-day stuff. Do you have a window? How large is your bed in your bedroom? Is there a bathroom in your room? Are you locked away? Why haven't I heard from you? Or Thanksgiving was almost uneventful until your call. We missed your presence, so we didn't laugh as much. What did those letters do for you?
I think, Gail, when I went into prison and I was receiving them every day, they were sustaining me. They were giving me a sense of what was happening at home. When I got out of prison and reread the letters, I reread them for perspective. My mother was sharing with me that, again, the circumstances of incarceration were not defining of who I was. But, Gail, I saw men in prison who were not receiving letters. They were not receiving communications. And every day, again, at 4 o'clock at mail call, they would say, Jackson and Jackson and Jackson. And I would watch men who were excited about the prospect of receiving mail, but the only one who was receiving mail was me. So I would give them my mother's letters and say, this is what my mother has to say about all of us today.
Wait, I think I might be having an aha moment. Do you have any tissue? It's also heartbreaking. Not that ridiculous book. What's really heartbreaking is that Triple J stole $750,000 in campaign funds, and he bought stuffed elk heads with his weird wife Sandy and a massive Star Wars action figure collection and Michael Jackson paraphernalia and a lot of other junk. And he went to prison. But here's the sad part. He's still collecting a federal pension. A federal pension? You've got to be kidding me, dude. This bud's for you. He pulls down about $140,000 a year, most of it tax-free for life. A federal pension. That's enough to make me cry. And now with Chicago aldermen going away to college, and Jesse Smollett obviously getting charged with filing false police reports, he might go to college, or at least community college, if you know what I'm saying. I'm thinking about those prison letters again. But not that idiotic stuff a mom might do, full of love and hugs. I'm talking about a practical letter to prison from mom. Maybe send her inmate son some prison recipes, like how to make some good federal prison tamales. Because prisoners get hungry too, Mom, and they need good snacks. This is the letter Jackson's mom should have written.
My dearest Stuff Elkhead buying son of mine, I take pen in hand in the hopes that you may cook some big house tamales from a recipe I've just found in a John Cass column. My, were they scrumptious. I've tried them myself, and I must declare them first rate. The first step, of course, is to obtain a bag of Doritos from the prison commissary. I would advise you, my son, not to select the Flamin' Hot Doritos, for as your mother, I can assure you that you will have digestive issues with those Flaming Hots. Leave the Flaming Hots alone, Jesse. Instead, buy regular Doritos and make a small hole in the bag and crush the chips in to a fine dust. And then pour this chip flour, if I may, into a bowl, add water to make a paste, some pre-cooked rice and noodles from the prison commissary, some soup mix, hot water, cook it in a microwave for 45 seconds, and add chili and refried beans. Of course, these are also available at the prison commissary. And drizzle it all with melted jalapeno cheese. Perhaps use a spork to mix in some jardinera. And maybe some honey. A little mayonnaise. Roll it up. And there you have it. A big house tamale a la queso. My son, endeavor to persevere. And upon your release from federal custody, you'll still be getting your $140K a year in pension, tax-free. We could do a book on prison recipes for some more cash. And we'll get all kinds of pub because, well, we're special. Yours truly, your mother.
So there's Jesse Smollett to talk about. He might be making some big house tamales. And the mayor's race in Chicago. Last minute weasel moves. Jeff Carlin, executive producer of the Rokon show with Anna Devolantis, is back in the studio. He's looking for that Ken Burns Civil War letter writing violin music. Where did I put that? I could just hear him shout it. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, syndicated columnist for the Chicago Tribune. And mentor to all those who want to make some big house tamales. And you, just days before the biggest mayoral election in Chicago in the past 40 years, you're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
About Dejan Irving? No. He was in the news. Dejan's not a hashtag. Kamala Harris doesn't tweet his name. Cory Booker doesn't tweet his name. Social justice warriors aren't all over his story. The Twitterverse doesn't know much about him. He's a one-year-old boy, and he was shot in the head at 99th and Troop. On February 7th, Chicago police think the shooters had targeted the mother. The family isn't cooperating much, I hear. Detectives are working the case. They're the ones visiting him at Comer's Children's Hospital. Sometimes I wonder if they're the only ones. I know the detectives care about it. But something else happened about a week before the boy was shot in the head. Remember? Jesse Smollett happened. And by now you know that he told a story. That in Chicago, armed with a cell phone in one hand and a tuna fish from Subway in the other, on one of the coldest nights of the year, Jesse Smollett, television actor and star of Empire, the TV show, fought off some Trump-loving racists. And he kept that tuna sandwich of his, and he made sure to let the people see the white noose that those racists put around his neck. The liberal social justice warriors were outraged. Presidential candidates Kamala Harris and Cory Booker. Yeah, Cory Booker's the one with T-Bone, the imaginary friend. Cory Booker and Kamala Harris called it a lynching. And since Smollett is a star on TV show, that Empire show being shot in Chicago, City Hall is supremely political, and City Hall got worried, and 24 detectives were assigned to the case. Now, this may seem like an open and shut case, or at least it did, as far as the left and many in the Democratic media complex were concerned, because it fit the narrative they loved to tell, that easy narrative about a hateful America crawling with Republican racists. The more conservative, the more racists. Have you heard that? Oh yeah, me too. And Smollett talked about it with Robin Roberts of ABC about what may have been the best acting performance of his life. It was like Oscar-worthy, really. He's black and he's openly gay and he wanted to set a heroic example as a man who'd fight to the death against his oppressors.
I fought back. They ran off. I didn't.
What do you say to a young gay man, a young gay person?
To learn to fight. And I don't just mean like learn to fight. I mean learn to fight. Learn to be a fighter. I am not advocating violence at all. So let's be clear about that. If you're going to die, fight until you do. Because if you don't fight, you have no chance. I have fought for love. I'm an advocate. I respect too much the people who I am now one of those people who have been attacked in any way. You do such a disservice when you lie about things like this.
If the attackers are never found, how will you be able to heal?
I don't know. Let's just hope that they are. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's not go there yet. I was talking to a friend, and I said, I just want them to find them. And she said, sweetie, they're not going to find them. And that just made me so angry, because so I'm just going to be left here with this? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just going to be left here with like, so they get to go free and go about their life and possibly attack someone else. And I'm here to left with the aftermath of this bull. That's not cool to me. That's not okay. So I understand how difficult it will be to find them. But we gotta. I still want to believe with everything that has happened that there's something called justice.
How difficult it will be to find them? Justice? Believe it, Jesse. There's something called justice. I knew it when you were charged with making it up. As far as I'm concerned, you should pay for all that police overtime and the extra cops. And you should probably do a few, maybe a couple weeks in jail. First offense, I understand. Maybe you can make a John Cass Big House Federal Tamale. A prison one from the commissary. Unfortunately, Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox ran away from this case. She said she knows some of the witnesses, but she wasn't all that clear on why she recused herself. That's a big mistake, Kim. Tony Preckwinkle can't protect you all the time. This is a time to be extremely clear. And former State's Attorney Anita Alvarez called her out for being a coward. It's also a mistake that so many social justice warriors in media are now skipping this Smollett story. They keep their distance. They're afraid of it. It burns them. Perhaps their prejudice and bias have been exposed. Some of them use race as a weapon. They bathe in anger and hatred and consider themselves tolerant and progressive. I think they should read the history of Yugoslavia, because it seems sometimes that they're trying to create Yugoslavia here. They all ran to the story when it fit their narrative, didn't they? And now they're silent when it doesn't fit. It is this abject silence, and a few of them using mitigating weasel words about others rushing to judgment, and it all cushions their fall. They think so. To me, it speaks volumes. The Italians have a phrase for this. Chi tace acquiesce. Or so says my barber, Rafael Ria. He who is silent says yes. The silence is the consent. And you know who are silent here? You know who you are. The people know too. They read. They know who's silent. I wrote a column on all this. It went national. My argument was that with so much heat on the case and 24 detectives and the left wedded to their narrative about racist, hateful Trump supporters, who turned out actually to be those two muscle-bound Nigerian brothers instead. And against all that, there was that little boy in the hospital, clinging to life, with the detectives visiting him. The detectives aren't racists. I don't know what their color is. They're not bad cops. They're hard working. They're overwhelmed. They're working this case of the little boy shot in the head. Not many people helping them. Somebody in that family knows who and why. But there aren't two dozen detectives on it. The politicians like Cory Booker and Kamala Harris and Nancy Pelosi, ooh, they're silent now. And so theirs is a lie of omission.
I respect too much the people who I am now one of those people who have been attacked in any way. You do such a disservice when you lie about things like this.
Of course you do, Jesse. You do such a disservice when you lie. You're a show pony, and you put your drama above the needs of the little boy in the hospital, and you cast yourself as a hero. And you opened your arms, and you got a lot of love from the people who clap on social media about such things. You know how this goes, everybody? It goes in stages. We're at the angry social punishment phase now. But soon, he'll be rehabilitated. Some insect will go on the internet, in a newspaper, on TV, broadcast or something. And they'll talk about his difficult past, make Jesse the victim, and then talk about redemption and forgiveness. And they'll make a thing out of it. Smollett will be in the spotlight. And they'll all be whole, and he'll be a star. And they'll have a pet. They'll all be whole again. But not that little boy, Dejan Irving, or the next one, or the next. They're not TV stars. They're just kids. And some end up floating face down in Chicago's river of violence. Liberal Democratic politicians really don't much care for them. They're upsetting. They just can't be weaponized. They're of little symbolic use, and so, ultimately, they're ignored. But the Jesse Smollett's, they're not ignored. They're stars.
I hear the train a-coming. It's rolling around the bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison. And time keeps dragging on.
If I've said it one time, I've said it a million times. People talk about politics as a game of addition. But in Chicago, that's really a lie. Especially now, days before the biggest mayoral campaign, the most important mayoral election in decades, with 14 candidates in the race. 14! That means that, you know, at least the top six are separated by maybe at most 2 or 3 points. So you've got Preckwinkle up there, Daley, Paul Vallis is up there, Lori Lightfoot is up there, Mendoza is up there, maybe Gary Chico. It's going to be an important race, and remember, it's subtraction, not addition. They say, oh yeah, politics is all about addition. What do they know? It's subtraction. Here's why. Jerry Joyce and Bob Fioretti, they're in the race. What are they doing there? They can't win. They couldn't govern. I'm still waiting for Jerry Joyce to explain why he's running. I mean, the commercials look great, but come on. Jerry Joyce, I understand 19th Ward, son of the 19th Ward, pride. Bob Fioretti's running too. What are they really doing? I'll tell you what they're doing. They're appealing to voters who would not cast a ballot for Bill Daley. So what are they doing? Think, people. Come on. Come on, Chumbalones. Think like a politician. Think like a shark. What are they doing? They're taking those anti-Daley votes away from somebody like Vallis. And who benefits? Bill Daley benefits. That's how it works. My enemy doesn't get the resources that he needs. Helps me. What about Amara Enya and LaShawn Ford? Do they really have a realistic chance to win? No. Enya might do well in a future challenge of U.S. Representative Danny K. Davis. He's tired and old and just endorsed businessman Willie Wilson for mayor. The last thing he ever did of substance besides kiss up the Farrakhan and then try to tell us that he's not supporting anti-Semitism is when Danny Davis put a crown of a messiah on the head of the Reverend Sun Young Moon. He's like Bobby Rush on the South Side. Idiotic. Sad. Depressing. And in a way, I kind of hope Enya takes him out. But Enya is not ready to be mayor. She's got serious problems keeping her own books in order. I mean, that story was in the Tribune the other day about loans she never paid back, about money lost, et cetera, et cetera. It's a catastrophe. But you know what Enya's doing and LaShawn Ford is doing? They're out there getting votes of African-Americans who don't really like Cook County Board President Tony Taxwinkle Preckwinkle. So in reality, they're doing what Joyce and Fioretti are doing on the white side of this ledger. They're taking votes away from former federal prosecutor Lori Lightfoot. This is part of the game, isn't it? Lightfoot said months ago. Subtraction. Yeah, I said. You can't very well teach the world to sing along the Chicago way. Nobody wants to learn how to sing. They want to learn how to hamstring you. The time for voters to think this out, and I wrote this in a column this week, is now. Not Tuesday when you're going into the polls. Now. You got to think the matchups. Every politician is thinking the matchups. Why don't you think about it? Politicians are ahead of you. They're ahead of me too. They're always ahead. They do it for a living. They're 4 and 5 elections ahead. And you know how I know they think 3 and 4 and 5 elections ahead? Here's how. How did a errand boy for the Daley family, Alderman Brian Hopkins, and I guess he's sliding over to Rahm, get installed as second ward alderman in time to take care of Sterling Bay's new $6 billion Lincoln Yards mega project? You know, the one that people in the neighborhood don't want? How did that happen? Because they plan ahead. That's how. They plan ahead. All right, so back to the matchups, all right? February 26th, if the top two vote-getters will face each other in the April runoff. What if their names are Preckwinkle and Daley? Who becomes mayor then? Because I know that people are out there whispering. This is part of the campaign, too. You whisper and tell people, oh, this guy can't win, that guy can't win. I hate when people do that. But they do it, and they're doing it among the influencers in the community. Okay? Let's see. Preckwinkle, she's got the ground game. She's got the Chicago Teachers Union, the SEIU backing her. They're the public unions that eat property taxes. They'll help get out the vote. There are no real water organizations to help Bill Daley. Daley has the endorsements of the Tribune, Crane Chicago Business. He's collected $7+ million in campaign money, mostly from business leaders. He's got that once magical political name. It may now very well be a curse. So if Preckwinkle is against Daley in the runoff, if Daley and Preckwinkle are the top people, the top vote getters in February 26th, who's going to win the mayoralty? I'll tell you who. Tony Preckwinkle. Tony Preckwinkle will become the next mayor of Chicago. She will defeat Bill Daley in that matchup. That's my opinion. I could be wrong. Okay. But I don't think I'm going to be wrong because there's such a thing as Daley fatigue. Okay? Daley fatigue. There's another thing. African-American voters have been running from Chicago in droves under Richard M. Daley, Daley's brother. They ran. Many of them ran to the suburbs, others to Atlanta, they just want to be safe. They don't want to be shot off their porches or shot to death in their front yards or in their house. But they know that this is probably the last time there will be a chance for a black candidate to win City Hall, because the Latino candidacy in the city, in the sanctuary city by the lake, Latino politics is rising. And they know it too. And history will note that Daley did not get help from House Speaker Michael J. Madigan. Boss Madigan isn't a fan of Daley. He likes Mendoza. And history will also note that business leaders put all their eggs in Daley's basket and stood by as Preckwinkle grabbed them and made a nice tasty omelet for her union friends. She serves them with cheese, maybe a little hot sauce. Progressive whites will move closer to Preckwinkle. Latinos will move closer to Daley. And in a one-on-one matchup, Daley Preckwinkle, she's the next mayor. Now, what happens if it's Chicago School CEO Paul Vallis facing Preckwinkle? Look, you know I'm biased here. I know it. I wanted Paul Vallis to be governor over dead meat. City Hall and the Daleys wanted Blago. They got Blago. Now, Preckwinkle's record of supporting tax increases and her support of controversial and ousted former Cook County Assessor Joe Berrios, whose property tax assessment hurt minorities and the poor, will become an issue in a Vallis-Preckwinkle race. Labor was going to try to portray Vallis as anti-union. But you know what? Cops? Look, his kids are cops. Firefighters, city workers, and many teachers are going to flock to him. I think he'd win. I also think that if Lori Lightfoot, former prosecutor, were matched against Daley, she'd carve him up in a debate. And she'd carve up Susana Mendoza. She would just leave a pile. I don't know what would be left on the floor. It would be that O-apostrophe green Susana green t-shirt that she wore at St. Patrick's Day with Mike Madigan in the parade. Now, what about Preckwinkle versus Mendoza? That's going to be a brawl, or would be a brawl. Mendoza would represent the whites and Latinos. Preckwinkle would reach out to blacks and white progressives. They would beat each other silly with a giant pink pillow that looked remarkably like Alderman Edward Burke under federal investigation on a federal wire. They'd knock the stuffings out of Burke and out of each other. So who'd win with Mendoza and Preckwinkle? I can't say. I'm not a fortune teller. I'm a newspaper man. Wake up, Chicago. The election is only days away. And just a few days hence, in the next edition of the Chicago Way, we're lucky to have Ro Khan joining us in studio. He works with Jeff Carlin. And Will Lee, who worked in sort of the Jeff Carlin role in print with me for many years. And now, as Jeff is, a reporter in his own right. For Jeff Carlin, WGN producer of the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVellantis. For me, John Cass, husband, father, soothsayer, kind of. Let's admit it. Newspaper columnist. Thanks for joining us on another edition of the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.